author of The Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous. Hello, it's Josephine here from Radio Gorgeous, and this, I think, is going to be the most interesting interview that I've ever done, because I have read Lindy Henny's book, Behold Sarah, and I really don't know where to begin, because I find it a book of facts, stream of consciousness, poetry, philosophy, inspiration, despair even. I mean, it has everything in it. So this is the first fiction book, but to me, it doesn't seem like fiction. No, welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Oh, thank you. No, it's partly fiction and partly autobiographical. So it's a mixture. Sometimes I've hotted it up a bit. I've left some things out. And no, it's a mixture of the two things.
So can you tell me what brought you to write such an eclectic book? Tell me about you.
Yeah, well, I mean, I suppose I'm an eclectic type because, I have lots of different ways of expression. And as far as literature is concerned, it's poetry, it's ordinary fiction stuff, short stories. It's a good old mixture. So the thing is, it sort of wrote itself, you know. I just sort of started and it rolled. Off it went. And I think it's... People who've read it seem to think it just goes.
Now, it's a lot to do with your relationship with God.
Yes.
Can you tell me about that?
Yes. I mean, it's an ongoing search, trying to understand, and it's changed so much. And I now don't even know if there is a God. And I really don't. And I'm not too troubled because it's a bit arrogant, but it ends up saying that I am God. And you are God. We all are. And that's what it's about. So it's been a discovery. And I think I've arrived where I want to arrive, as far as God's concerned.
So do you think that writing the book, you were exploring your relationship with God?
Not only. Like, well, yes, we could say that if we say life is God. It was my relationship with my living, with my life. And that's where I equate that with God.
Now, at the moment, we're sitting in the most incredible houseboat in Chelsea, covered in art, met your lovely husband, seem to have the most fabulous lifestyle. Can you tell me about your life? What you've done in your life? What got you here?
Gosh. My life's been very long, you know. I'm sort of 83, so it's been a long one.
She doesn't look it, darling. She's got a lovely red lippy on and a jewellery. And her denim skirt and her gorgeous silver rings. She's looking beautiful.
Oh, well, that's very nice to hear. Where can I start? I started off in London, in a very upper-middle-class sort of family, you know, with nannies and fräuleins and all that stuff.
Was that in Kensington?
Oh, of course, dear. Of course. Yes. And very lucky, went to a lovely school in Kensington, did a lot of acting at the school, which I loved. And I went to a wonderful dancing class called Madame Vacani. Anyone of my age who sort of was around, she was a number. And that was great fun. And I remember being a Milky Way and on the Scala Theatre. So we put on shows, and I was a daisy as well, a little daisy. And it was great. So that was that. And then along came Hitler and the war, and that broke everything up. I don't know if you want to know the whole of the story.
I do. I want to know where you went in the war and what happened.
Oh, okay. So what happened was my father had been in the army.
What, so for the World War One?
No, World War Two.
Okay.
No, but he was in the, what do you call it, Sandhurst and Regular, all
okay,
that stuff.
Okay, so he really was in the army. Yeah.
And he'd come out of it, and he was in a stockbroker at that point. So he goes back in. And off he goes. And I'm left with my mother and my sister, my lovely sister Jill. And my mother, unfortunately, she was wanting to look after me, but she drank and she was an alcoholic. Gorgeous woman. And it really interests me because I was taken away. We were made wards of court because they thought it wasn't safe to to be with an alcoholic.
And in those days, for that to happen, it must have been serious, because people did drink then.
Yeah. It was, yes, the 1920 stuff.
Yes, yeah.
No, but she was wonderful. And I really, looking back on my life, think I would have rather been with a drinking mother than with these guardians.
Yeah, who did they send you off to?
Well, they sent me off to a great aunt and a grandmother. Beautiful houses, beautiful everything, but you know, life was ruined.
They weren't your mother?
No, incredibly.
Or your daddy? Your daddy wasn't?
Nothing. No. And along with that came a lot of problems, really, because there was an uncle who was living in the house who abused me. And who did I tell? Oh, no, I couldn't tell anyone. And anyway, so it was a tricky time.
And it was in those days when stiff upper lip, no one complained.
How right you are, absolutely. Mm. So one sort of cried at night. And actually, I didn't cry. I used to have what was called bilious attacks. And when I eventually had a therapy, he said what I was trying to do was throw up all the horrors, get rid of it. And that's what his way he analysed it.
So you literally had massive waves of sickness.
Yeah. That's incredible. Yeah. Anyway, I got through it and I went to the most wonderful school, boarding school. Lucky me.
And what, were you relieved to get out, of course?
And I loved it. I was academic. I was good at sport. I was good at this. I was so good at everything. And it was very interested in God as well. Mm. So that was...
Do you think you clung on to God because you had nobody else?
Yeah. Yes, I think you got that right. It was an interesting thought anyway that there was a God. I liked it. And I feel so protected.
Was it a C of E school? You went to chapel twice on Sundays?
No, we went... we had, I think, not chapel, but something... I don't know what it was called, but a service every morning. Mm. And then on Sundays we went off to church.
Mm-hmm. And that gave you solace?
Yes, yeah, it did. It made me feel safe.
Yeah, well, that's what it's all about.
Yeah, it was very good. And guess what? I was head girl.
Oh, well done.
Wasn't that something?
Now, were you in contact with your father at all during that time?
I think he came down with his new wife once, which was good. And my mother married my godfather, was up in Scotland, and he was an alcoholic too. So my mother never came. It was such a shame.
I just feel the heartbreak underneath.
Not a good start. But in a way, it was a good start. I mean, I don't think I'd be a psychotherapist like I am now if I hadn't experienced all that. So, you know...
And the strength you gain.
Yeah, a lot. Yeah. So after that, luckily, my headmistress, they loved drama at the school. So I went to the Royal Academy and did 3 years there of theatre. And I remember my headmistress said, "You can't just be an actress, dear. You cannot just be an actress. You have to have a teacher's diploma too, so you have to do..." Which actually made sense, because you could make money even if...
So to be a drama teacher?
As well, yeah. So I did the two running parallel. Yeah. So is that not enough?
No, you've got to carry on.
Carry on.
Yeah.
So,
Did you get on the stage?
No. Oh, did I? I'm not good at remembering. No, I didn't. No. I did quite a lot of broadcasting. And
what sort? I'm fascinated being a broadcaster myself.
Yes, I think I remember doing...
plays. Oh, how wonderful.
Yeah.
But I can't... Was that at the BBC?
Yes, I think it was. But, you know, I can't remember.
Oh.
But I know there was some of that going on.
How brilliant. Oh. Now, what years would this be? Kind of mid...
1950s.
Yeah, early 50s.
Early 50s.
Yeah.
And then along came the man, and I got married, and then I sort of stopped everything a bit. I went on a while. And what happened then? I'm just trying to get the significant bits.
Yeah.
I couldn't have babies, and there was nothing wrong with me at all. And again, in analysis, we worked out that it was perhaps I didn't want to be a repeat of my mother. I somehow said, no, I don't want to be like
So did
her.
They check you internally and everything?
Nothing,
they found
nothing wrong.
No,
nothing. Except it was in me somewhere. So I adopted and had three lovely kids.
Now, were you frightened to be a mother because of your, you know, or did you overcompensate? How, what were you like as a mother?
A little bit anxious. Yeah. You know, can I do it? Well, I think everyone feels that a bit, but I think I was a little bit over anxious. And especially as they were adopted, I sort of felt I had to be an even better mother,
yes.
You know.
Now I can see that. Yeah.
It was great, though. It was good.
RadioGorgeous.com. And having adopted children, did you find that they had, I mean, how could you understand their characters as quickly as you can if they're your own? Because you'd say, oh, that temperament's like Auntie so-and-so, that's like my husband. How did you understand them?
I think it's, in a way, it's much better than you have this attitude. It could be like Auntie this or Uncle that. You just let them be themselves, which I think is a much better way of bringing someone up. So they were authentic from the word go. And I didn't have to say, you know, you should behave a bit better, and da da da. No, it was very good, that adoption.
What about your mother? Was she around?
No.
Had she died by then?
She died, when did she die? No, she died before I got them, I think.
How old was she?
48.
What?
Yeah, something like that.
So she drank herself to death?
So they said, but actually she had flu. So it could have been influenza, but weakened because she was a drunk.
Did you go to her funeral?
No. She was up in Scotland. No, I didn't.
I can't believe it.
Yeah.
Now, I'm really interested to know. I know that you're, because we had a tiny chat before, but that marriage failed. When did you decide you needed therapy?
Because I became paralysed.
What?
And again, you know, lots of little tests, you know, they put needles in my backbone or somewhere like this.
So how old were you at this stage?
Oh, Lord love us.
Or how old were the children?
Well, about this, still about that 10-year-old.
Okay, yeah, so it's about the right time.
Yeah, that's right.
So you became paralysed from where?
From the waist down and my right arm.
Yeah.
So there was...
Terrifying.
Well, no, not if you're the person who's got it. You like it. That's one of the signs. I think it's just not worrying at all.
Yeah.
So, anyway, they discovered it was that. So that's when I got into analysis.
So they discovered that there was nothing wrong with you again?
Physically. And it was psychological.
So you were holding on to something. That was it, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's not letting go had made your body.
And not admitting the child abuse or anything like that, you know, just...
When you went in therapy, did you know you'd had the abuse, or did you discover it with your therapist?
I knew all along, I knew, but I'd never voiced it. I'd never expressed it. And that's what you need to do to get through something. You need to actually...
So tell me about the first time you admitted it. What happened?
Oh, dear. I really didn't know. I mean, I think it was evident from the very first session that it was a psychological thing. But by then I wasn't paralysed, but it came back occasionally. And it was all to do with fear of sex and fear, you know. The two things, again, we had this one. He thought it was because I didn't want to walk away from my children, like my mother. And I thought it was because I didn't want to have sex with anyone anymore. So anyway,
it's
we
a combination of both,
wasn't
it?
Yeah. You know, we worked through it. It was wonderful.
So how did you find it? And what sort of therapy was it?
He, who did he study with? It was conventional, but I mean...
Sounds brilliant, though.
It was
sounds like
brilliant.
Because, I mean, it all depends on your therapist, doesn't
absolutely.
It? I mean, I had a lot until I found the one, and that changed my life.
Absolutely.
You know, so you found the one right at the beginning of your search, which you are so
and his
fortunate.
His name was Oscar.
Oh.
Oscar. And he was extraordinary. And I could find I could talk about things, you know, and express them and cry and all the emotion which had just been pushed down, out it came.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
So even though it was probably the most exhausting thing you ever did.
It was towering, yeah.
The healing began.
Mm. Yeah, almost from the word go. No, it was a wonderful, so to me it was suddenly to be released and to be able to express myself and be myself and made me want to become a therapist myself.
Wonderful. Yeah, yeah. Wonderful. Mm-hmm. So tell me about your training and who did you go with?
Where did I go? Oh, yes, it was called the Westminster Pastoral Foundation, WPF. It's still going. And it was a four-year training. And again, it's like almost like being in therapy all over.
Yes.
And very, very, very good. And I loved it. And then I started to, when I qualified, I started working in prisons. I've always been very, very close in myself to criminals. I don't know why, but I feel very, very close to them.
Could be because they're victims and they have all their freedom taken away from them.
Could be that. Could be that. And I really did love them. I was at Wormwood Scrubs and I was at Pentonville. And they hadn't been having therapy in those places. So I brought it in. I'm so pleased. And I started with groups when I had to do groups because it was too expensive to do one-to-one in that anyway. So I had groups. And I did love those guys. I love them much better than the guards.
Yeah, yeah. But I suppose these men didn't even know what the word therapist meant.
No.
But never met a woman like you.
No.
Tell me a story and you that really sticks in your mind about a prisoner.
About the prisoners.
Yeah.
I think one of the ones that really touched me was when one of them burst into tears. It was like a breakthrough for the whole group of seven. And what was lovely, a rather not too clean handkerchief came out of someone's pocket and was handed to him. And then another one got up and put his arms around him and comforted him. And that was a great sort of breakthrough. I mean, it doesn't sound like a great one, but it really was. It was a very lovely, lovely happening. Whether one helped them, maybe just a little. But I think it would have been much better one-to-one because they couldn't. Most of them were offenders against children and things, you know, and it's an awful pecking order that they are loathed by the other prisoners. And some of them couldn't really tell me everything because they couldn't tell it in front of the others. So it should have been one-to-one. However, it was a start, and I think they still have much more than therapy in prisons now than they used to.
Well, if you think about it, these people are always being abused themselves. I mean, that's the thing.
Every single one of them has had everything, except for murder, of course.
Yeah.
They've had everything done to them that they do to other people.
Yeah. So they do, I have sympathy with them. I don't know whether I should be saying that.
No, that's... I quite agree. I mean, certainly empathy.
Yes.
And... Yeah. And an absolute loving to work with them. I really, it was wonderful.
But can you tell me a story? I know you're not meant to kind of tell, but it's such a long time ago. One of the stories that one of the men told you about their lives, you know, that will make us understand these prisoners and their backgrounds.
I mean, some of them were absolutely grim, you know. It was sort of almost hanging them up from the ceiling. It's pretty awful stuff, actually.
Really? Don't even want to talk about it?
No, not really.
Okay.
And then a lot of... I can't even use polite language.
No, you can swear.
I can't swear.
Yeah, you can. You can on Radio Gorgeous because it's not off-call.
No, but, I mean, there was a lot of mother... I don't know if I'm allowed to say fuckers.
Yeah?
Fucking mothers and their sons. Oh, a lot, God. Lot more. And I actually saw something...
Sorry, mothers having sex with their sons?
Yeah.
What? I've never heard of that.
Yeah. I actually heard something on the radio or something the other day saying a lot of the abuse is from mothers, which is the first time I've heard it actually stated.
Mm. I've never, ever heard that in my life.
It's because of the holiness of women, you know, holiness of motherhood, isn't it?
Now, is this because a woman is probably in an abusive relationship with her husband and she's so lonely?
No, I think that I don't...
What does she need from the son? Is it affection?
It's a sexual... Power, I think that would be power. It was not so much sex with, it was much more her having sexual acts on him, which happened a lot.
God, I'm sorry, that's the first time I've ever heard that in my life, so I'm really shocked.
Well, I know. I mean, it was quite universal.
Wow.
No, that's not true.
Yeah. No, yeah. I know what you mean.
I mean, amongst that little group of really injured, hurt people, it was quite much more the woman, the mother, than the father.
Gosh, I suppose the father was out just getting drunk and...
Whatever,
Yeah.
When actually talking about them, I really did love those guys. I just wonder how they are.
Oh. So how long did you do that for?
I did, I think I did about 4 years at Wormwood, and then I went to Pentonville and did about 3 or 4 there.
Fabulous.
I got better at it.
Now, did you leave that and start doing kind of therapy for kind of middle-class people? You
know? Ordinary people.
Ordinary people.
Yes.
Yeah. What, you had your own practice?
I still have.
Oh.
I mean, it's much smaller.
Yes.
Because I got doing so many other things.
So they kind of old clients you've got?
Sometimes they come back for MOT, you know.
Oh.
yes. I think I've only got 3 at the moment, but that's about right.
So how do you suss people out?
Oh, it's so easy.
Oh, God.
No, it really is easy once you've been doing it a lot. I mean, I'm sure you can. I suss most people out.
I'm a very optimistic, so I can generally really like everybody. But I suppose that's got nothing to do with therapy.
No.
Tell me how you kind of get to the core of their problem, you know, how you find it. Because they can't find it. That's why they've come to you.
Yeah, well, they've really started to find it by coming to me, you know, at least saying there's something wrong.
Yeah.
And you just talk and show enormous... You have to have love for the person. Mm. You really do. Like I said, I love those prisoners. And you allow them to talk. You sort of prod them along the way a little bit. And you find out what the problem is.
So would you ever... Are you allowed to label them? Are you allowed to say, or do you guide them? I'm interested to know how.
Yeah, never. I never label.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I've written some poems about that. Not labeling.
Yeah.
I think I just guide them into accepting themselves, being who they are, and stopping them trying to improve themselves, just be. Especially, I have always had a lot of recovering alcohol, AA people. And they're always trying to change themselves to not be like this and to be like that. And I say, just drop it, because you'll be all right if you just drop all that nonsense. So it's really a lot of taking stuff off them.
Wow.
Mm, and it works, because basically, they're fine. And if they know that, and they know you respect them, and know that in spite of all their behaviour, that they're just fine, really. It all works.
So they're not happy in themselves, and so they're trying to improve themselves with sort of these rules and regulations.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
And then, the I shoulds, isn't it? It's the I shoulds.
Shoulds and oughts and musts, yeah.
Are they what do you in then?
Yeah, well... I mean, I've tried to do it in my own life, but I mean, one still does a little bit of ought.
Yeah.
You know, I ought to put makeup on, or I ought to have a bath, or I ought to this.
We don't actually have to have oughts. Oughts. Love it.
Oughts. In a very advanced way of doing, of being, you don't need oughts. But it takes quite a long time to get to that. I don't know if I've got to it yet. Do you think you have?
No, I because I like my oughts. They kind of get me up in the morning.
I must get up.
Yeah, honestly, otherwise I really would stay in bed all day. I would sleep in till about 11,
I think I would too. Maybe that's how it ought to be.
That's why I'm saying, because I've got a dog, because I've got to get up for the dog. You know, I like having responsibilities, which I ran away from all my life.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought I wanted to be free and wild, but actually the responsibilities have made me grow so much more.
Yeah. It's like in a painting, you do need a frame. Otherwise you just could splash on and on and on and on and on, and it doesn't work. It's the containing, isn't it? And the same in our lives, I think.
Now, we're just talking. We just got onto the subject of art. So I'm surrounded by stunning paintings, all slightly different styles, may I say, but one theme is bright colour. Yeah. Yeah. And I suspect they're yours.
They are mine, yes. Yeah.
Tell me about when you started painting and what your inspiration is.
I was in a bad mood. It was the stage before Vic, before him.
Yeah.
And I was sort of living on my own in, like we often have to do, in a little room.
With three kids?
No. They'd grown up.
Okay.
They'd grown up. And I was getting very frustrated and very angry. And someone had left a canvas there. And the paint was around. And I just lost my temper. And I just went into the paints and chunk, chunk, chunk. And I began to absolutely love it. And then I, you know, did some more, and then I spread it around, and that got me going. So it was bad temper.
Fabulous. So that was 40 years ago, 30 years ago?
No. Gosh. No, I think it's... Yes, maybe it is. Yeah. Time has passed. Yeah.
So have you been trained in any way, or are you totally naive? Yeah.
No.
Lovely.
And
lovely.
I would hate to be taught.
Yeah. Yes. Because then it would ruin the idea of it.
Yeah.
I can see some that look like Mexican. There's a lot of sky and water,
yes.
I'd say that.
Here we are.
Yeah. Well, in my houseboat, I can see a lot of sky.
Yeah. And I do find the sky quite lovely.
Yeah, and there's countryside, and there's another planet. There's a kind of, maybe it's Mars with two people on it.
And I've got two little birds I'm very fond of.
Lovely.
They're there and they're somewhere else.
Lovely.
And usually it's pathways. Nearly everything's got a pathway.
Wow. So what do you think that's about?
It's attaining, getting to, we could say God. But then again, you know what I think about God. I mean, it's moving, maybe you could just say it by moving deeper, moving upper, downer. It's just movement.
Because God is our higher self, is it not?
Yeah, I think so.
Our consciousness.
Yes,
yeah.
I think so.
And we have a choice, if we're conscious, whether to be good or bad.
Yes. Mm. Not that I believe there's bad, actually.
Ah.
No, I don't believe there's bad.
Oh, tell me more about that. Because I was always meant to be the bad one in our family, which was so annoying.
Yes. And
been given a label.
And not true anyway.
We then got down to eventually discussing Behold Sarah, Lindy's semi-biographical novel.
Sarah, I think, has reached a point in her life when she doesn't know whether to kill herself or not, because she just feels she's existing. And this impasse has happened because her sister, who she loved very much, died, and her lover had died. So it was a big point. And she was 69 years old. Then she decided that perhaps she could write her story to see if there was any meaning to her life. That was the one bit of it. And the other thing she wanted to know, was there some sort of God? Was there some sort of force, some energy that she needed to find? So that's what she does. She goes right back through her life.
Then I asked Lindy when she started writing.
I was 60.
Yep. Great. Okay.
About then.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's no effort to me. I never say I'm going to write today. I just write. I'm very lucky.
What time do you normally do it, or do you just do it any time?
Any old time.
Yeah.
It takes over, and it's lovely. I mean, I've been awfully spoiled, aren't I? Haven't I? Not aren't I?
I think you've created your life, and I'm really, really delighted to meet someone who has completely, and that's what Radio Gorge is about, to meet a woman who has turned their life around. And
yes.
I'm so delighted that you've come onto Radio Gorgeous, and I think you're really brave to have told me all those things that happened to you so long ago, and to reveal your pain on Radio Gorgeous. And if people want to buy Behold Sarah, a novel by Lindy Henny, it is published by Clink Street. Thank you so much for coming on to Radio Gorgeous.
I've had a good time. It's been great fun. Thank you very much.